Three, two, one, it's Shazam. This is Carissa, and there is no Kayla here because she got to do this week's interview with the unbelievable Jade. She was part of the live podcast we did at the Chicago Magic Lounge for Women in Magic in 2018. And that was such an amazing experience for me because Jade and Alba and I hung out quite a bit and became really amazing friends. And it's such a timely thing that we are releasing Jade's episode because it is currently Women in Magic Week here at the Chicago Magic Lounge again. And just last night, I got to do another live podcast with two of the fantastic women that are here this week, Alexandra Duvivier and Rachel Wex, which was wonderful, and it feels like history is just repeating itself. I'm having such a good time, and the live podcast last night was just so lovely. But that is not what this is about. This is about the fact that we have our first repeat guest, which of course would be Jade, because she is an exceptional woman. She was the first woman to win the International Brotherhood of Magicians coveted Gold Medal of Magic. She's won the Mandrake Award from France, as well as the Female Magician of the Year Award from the International Magician Society in Las Vegas. She has performed a command performance for the Royal Family of Monaco at the Princess Grace Theater. She works for corporate clients like Sony and Facebook, Apple Computers, and Google. She was on the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, and she appeared on Fool Us and was absolutely fantastic. I can't take credit for all of those accolades. Kayla wrote that out for me. Thank you, Kayla. I have listened to this episode now twice. It's such a powerful episode. She talks about so much. Chi and Chengling Su and some amazing stuff. And she actually talks about some personal experience with sexual assault. And it was so powerful to listen to again this morning before recording this. I just cannot wait for all of you to experience what I just experienced now. Have a wonderful day. Enjoy this episode. And remember, my God, do we love Jade. Jade.
Hi.
Oh, this is so great. So you are officially our first repeat.
Yay.
Yes. Yay. So happy. So let's get started. Can you just give us the general, how'd you get started in magic? Cheesy question that you always get asked.
I fell into it. I was 17. I wanted to start working. And a friend of mine said, hey, there's a position open at the World of the Unexplained Museum as a cashier.
And that was in San Francisco.
San Francisco, mm-hmm. Fisherman's Wharf. And I thought, well, heck, sure, I'll go do that. Signed up. I got the job. I'd say maybe 5 months later, I got the notice. They said, the museum is closing. It's going to become the Guinness World Records. But meanwhile, the magic shop, when you go through the museum, you'd end up in the magic shop. They said, the magic shop will remain open. So if you want to keep working, you can work in the magic shop. And of course, I jumped at it because it was that or work at McDonald's.
So it's more fun to.
Yes.
Work at, yep. Great.
So I didn't know that it entailed demonstration. Well, they told me when I was still a cashier at the museum, is that you'll have to demonstrate a few things. So I learned the cups and balls and the hot rod, mm-hmm. basic things. But then I realized when you start working at the magic shop, there are so many other things that you must master if you want to make any money for the store.
Yeah.
But it was a slow progress, and I had an assistant manager that was very encouraging and mm-hmm. said, oh, sure, you could do it. And you know what? It's people like that, the confident, reassuring, yes, of course you can do it. Those are the people I am drawn to.
Great.
Because I need them, even if I'm not sure myself, if they tell me I can, I was like, okay. If you say I can, then I guess I can. And I do it. And so through all the trials and tribulations of trying to master the art of demonstration, I eventually got very good at it. And maybe a year into working at the magic shop, this guy comes in and he's making me show everything, all the tricks we have in the store, big stagey things like the temple screen and little Mac Magic, cheapo magic props that we had. I demonstrated everything. And after like an hour and a half of demonstrating everything, he said, you know what? Since you know how everything works, why don't I just hire you?
And this was for a school show. Is that
this
right?
This was a school show.
So for kids.
Yes.
And you had never performed outside of the shop
never.
Before.
Never. And I thought, well, he's going to pay me, I don't know what it was, $100 for a little, you know, whatever it was. I thought, of course, I'm just going to borrow all these props and then I'm going to do this thing. Not intimidated because I know how to do it. So I did it and I realized the kids loved it. And I thought, hey, maybe I should do kids' birthday parties. I think I can do that. So I don't know how I started doing that. Maybe kids would come in or the parents would say, we need a magician for my kid's 8th birthday. Can you come or whatever? And eventually I started doing kids' magic shows. One kid would say, oh, we want Jade because we saw her at Mary's birthday party. Yes. You know, that's how it goes.
Sure.
And then the parents would see the show and then they would say, oh, you know what? We have a Christmas party. Can you come and do our Christmas party for the company? It's like, sure, of course. And I'm thinking, what's the difference?
Anyone who gets it gets that. Like anyone who gets it is laughing along with us. And then there is a group of people going, no, what really is the difference? What was the immediate difference you notice? You like walk into a corporate party, do the show and go, oh my God, I need to change things.
Well, wait a minute though. Here's the thing. Creating magic for kids was actually more difficult because the adults were easier to fool.
Oh, okay.
Because I was doing the floating bill.
Yeah.
And they're like, there's a thread. They would grab at it.
Sure. Because they don't understand. They don't.
They see in a straight line. Mm. Kids see in a straight line. Adults think all multiple million ways because they're too educated and too smart.
Yeah.
And so what I realize is the smarter the people, the easier it is to fool them. Like the scientists.
Yes, right. Yeah. The engineers.
The engineers.
Yeah.
Oh, they love that. But the kids were the hardest. So then that's what I started to realize. You converse differently, but the tricks remain the same.
Mm.
And I was thinking the adults were easier to fool. And that was fascinating to me. So I did more and more adult shows and started to phase out of kid shows. And meanwhile, I remember still working in the magic shop thinking, you know, I heard about this place, the Magic Castle, and that everyone in the world wants to work there. So maybe I should put an act together to work at the Magic Castle. So we had boxes of magic tricks that have no instructions and crap stuff that we're going to throw away.
At the shop. Great.
At the magic shop. And one of the products that I chose from that box of garbage was the trick I do where I produce silks from a piece of paper.
Okay. Yep.
And then from the paper, the water comes out.
Great. Yes.
Nobody does that.
No, I've never seen anyone besides you do it.
Yeah. Because it didn't sell well. Nobody demonstrated
it. Too much maintenance.
Too much.
Yeah.
And so I'm thankful that I found that and decided to put it in.
Mm.
And also I had to find a character at the same time. And an old friend of mine was doing a Chinese act. He was Caucasian.
Yep. Great.
And he would draw his eyes out to look really Asian.
Sure.
And he would have myself and a friend of mine assist him.
I'm so mad.
And then I would think, oh, wait a minute. I'm Chinese. I could do his act. Why is he doing my culturally correct act? So that's how the Chinese act came around.
Amazing.
But you have to also know that as an immigrant, that as most immigrants are, we reject our culture when you're the immigrant. You want to be as far away from it as possible.
You're just trying to assimilate to your current culture. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
But because of this magic act that I had to put together, I had to embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
So I came full circle and started doing my Chinese act that I thought, oh, I'm Chinese. I could do this. I looked for objects that were related, that were Asian, like rice bowls. Oh, yeah, that's Asian.
Yeah.
What else is Asian? Oh, parasols. Mutilated parasol. Oh, yeah. That fits. What else is there? Snowstorm. I found it in Di Vernon's book.
Great.
Oh, yeah, I could do that. snowstorm in China, right? Yeah, right. It didn't say in Europe. It said snowstorm in China.
It wasn't like a Chicago December. It was like, no, this is specifically great. Yeah. This is awesome.
So that's how the act came together. Mm. And I had the music that I use now from the very beginning.
Great.
Somehow I edited it together. It's from an LP that I found. It's has no marketing. What is it?
Like a royalties. Rights. Yeah.
Because it was from an orchestra in China. And so this is like, I don't know, in the 50s or 60s when they recorded it. So there were no liabilities or whatever. Mm. So I could actually use it on TV or whatever I want right
now.
That's great. Yeah, I know.
Great.
So with that, I remember that for the longest time, I could not, or I didn't listen to my music. I didn't perform listening to my music. It was just background.
Yeah.
Until I worked with Amos Lefkovich. It was a show that with Mark Wilson, and Amos was in the show with me. And he says, you know, Jade, you know, when you hear this beat and it rises up, maybe that's when you, the rice bowls, that's when the water should appear. I said, well, yeah, I could. And he says, well, and you hear this piece of music here, and that beat changes, that's when you could do the tear paper. You can tear your paper there. And so with his direction and encouragement, he didn't exactly say, but he suggested. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I don't take orders very well. I only take suggestions.
Great. I like this a lot. Wonderful.
And so because when you suggest, it means I could take your suggestion or not, and you wouldn't be offended. Mm-hmm. Because I'm also my own person and I'm too strong-willed to have somebody mold me. Mm. And so I'm in many ways happy about that because who Jade is because mostly I picked and chose everybody's opinions and ideas and thought, okay, that's me. And no, that's not me.
Yep.
And made it into me.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm gonna backtrack on a couple of things. No, because you've just said so many things.
I know.
And I'm like, I don't want to interrupt. So I was writing notes as you were talking. So going back, you were working with this man who's Caucasian doing a Chinese themed act. And that's sort of a theme in magic is like, you know, recently, just my own experiences because of working at the Magic Castle. This sounds terrible. I'm going to say it. And I feel like disgusting every time I mention this because I realize that it's not meant to do this, but we're still teaching the hand matrix with bottle caps. That's called Chinka-Ching. And it like genuinely makes me mad. And I realize that it's not the goal, but it's in books. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just a constant like, magic, especially written before 1995, is just, there's so much accidental racism. Yeah. Did you encounter a lot of that, like when you were learning magic, especially in the magic shop, you've got these props that have quote unquote Chinese writing on it that or may not actually say anything of a word, or maybe they do say something and it's an insult or something. Did you encounter a lot of that? And how did that influence, like, did it ever discourage you? Did it encourage to go, oh, there's so much magic that fits who I am, but not actually, like, people think it is fitting.
Right. So when in particular, one of the illusions, it's the temple screen.
Yes.
And they have Chinese, quote unquote. It's not really Chinese. They just saw some words and they just like made it kind of look like Chinesey words and it could be. And so for me, I can only laugh at it. Mm. Like other white people think that's Chinese, but I know it's not.
Oh my Lord.
Think I was more forgiving because again, I was starting at 17.
Yes.
And then into my 20s. I came here to the U.S. when I was 9. Mm. So it wasn't that long ago. I'm still assimilating myself.
Sure.
All through high school, I had to take English as a second language class.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm still the foreigner, even at 17 and 18. And then, you know, it took a long time for me to start feeling like I'm not a foreigner anymore. Mm. And so to see that, it's kind of typical.
Yeah.
It's almost expected Ugh. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the people putting the props together meant to offend.
Right. It's the accidental.
Yes.
Yep.
That's right. So therefore, I don't take offense. And also at the same time, I know that there are Asians out there that take offense to the word Oriental.
Mm.
To me, because it's the language that I learned, Oriental meant Far East, la la la. I know the connotations that comes with that, but I choose to not focus on the connotations other than back then, Oriental meant Far East.
Mm-hmm.
English is still my second language, so I make a lot of leeway. I cut a lot of slack for language. I think if I was born here as an American Chinese, I might take more offense. Like, do you know what year we're in now? Really? Are you still continuing this?
Right.
And I think that I can understand that as well. But from my point of view, as an immigrant, even though it's been so many years, I don't know. I don't, you know, life is only as big of a problem that you want to focus on the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You can focus also on the good things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do I want to make a fuss about that? No. It's not worth it to me. Life is too short.
So then in that case, Chung Ling Su doesn't make you mad.
No.
That's amazing. It makes me mad. And he didn't try to appropriate my culture. I also came from...
Oh, that's right.
Right. So my mother was a martial artist. So yeah. We spent a lot of time just around Asian culture, uh-huh. mainly Japanese culture uh-huh. and Japanese American culture. So that was just sort of where like a lot of, you know, as a kid, I did the Chinese laundry ticket uh-huh. tour and restore uh-huh. and not realizing as a 10-year-old that that was a problem. And uh-huh. nobody told me any different. It was a very sweet story about coming to San Francisco and working with my mother's sensei. And it made sense. But also, I don't know what that said. I have no idea what that piece of paper said. Probably uh-huh. nothing. So now I look back on what I used to do and realize, oh, I think I did a couple bad things and I didn't realize. So I think it's amazing that you're like, okay, I'm going to give leeway.
Yeah.
If you were to see something, like if suddenly Chung Ling Su uh-huh. existed today,
no.
how would that, what would you do? Like, then basically I'm saying,
I don't think it's acceptable now.
Great. Okay.
I cut history slack because that was a different time
mm-hmm.
and different ways of thinking and can't change history.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Things were different.
But yeah, but now it's
now
like,
it's different.
Yeah, we understand.
Yeah. Now we should be wiser. Not necessarily all of the U.S. states are wiser.
Right.
They're not all woke. So.
Right.
That's how it is.
I'm so happy you just said woke. I'm like, that's really pleased. How many people confuse you with Juliana Chen?
Oh, lots. If we ever show up at the same place,
oh my gosh.
They can't tell us apart.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And Julie Eng. The three of us. Hello. Hello.
I love that. Because you all don't look alike.
No, I don't think we look alike.
But they're just... They've just, everybody
Asian
just
women,
thrown
so.
You into a thing. But also, I mean, I can't tell you how many times somebody's like, oh my gosh, Carissa, it's so nice to meet you. And I'm like, I'm sorry.
Really?
At what point did you ever see me as her? My hair is brown. That should be your immediate giveaway.
Wow.
Yeah, regularly. People also used to confuse me and Kristen Lambert.
Wow.
Which, again, not even
don't
close.
Don't even look the same.
But that's sort of the, like, you're the minority. So,
okay,
just
that's,
boom.
That's good to know. I don't feel
Is
bad.
It? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because I thought, oh, Asian female. That's it. That's enough. But you and Carissa.
Not even close.
And Kristen Lambert, yeah. You don't look even the same.
No.
Totally different.
There was a time when Kristen Lambert, Jessica Jane Peterson, Leah Orleans, and I all used to get sort of confused for each other because we all had curly hair and big eyes. So everyone would be like, which one of you is the one? You're like, oh no.
Wait, are these our Caucasians?
All four women. Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing. Yep.
Wow.
And then add in, like, no one's ever gone, Are you Jade or are you Kayla? Like, no one's, you're right, but everyone's confusing the three Asian women in the magic community.
That is so funny.
My lord.
Oh, I know.
That's amazing. I think that's really interesting. I always just love, I just think that's a really just very fascinating thing to hear that you just get.
Yeah, confused. I was starting to, I was going to have t-shirts whenever Juliana shows up. No, I'm the other one.
That's awesome.
For sure. They're going to say whatever it is. It's going to be the other one.
You all have J names as well.
Like, exactly, there is no hope
for the three. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, God.
Oh, gosh. That's awesome. So speaking of, this is a very, maybe a large jump in transition. I would love to discuss your thumb tie routine because personally, I think it's the best thing you do, or at least it's the thing I love watching the most. Oh,
thank you.
The thing about your thumb tie routine that I think is incredibly powerful and something to note, especially for our listeners, is the fact that you do go through somebody's body, which can be seen as an invasion of personal space.
Yes.
And I mean, I dissected your script.
Oh, you did?
For this interview. And I have done it before because I would not be comfortable with it.
Uh-huh.
However,
uh-huh.
I've figured out why. And I don't know if I, so I wanted to talk to you about it because I think it's really interesting. So you say the line, if you don't mind, about 7 times throughout your routine. And so you go, if you, can you do this if you don't mind? Can you do this if
really?
You don't mind? Yes.
Really?
And it's not like a weird word tick or anything. Oh. To me, I went, oh my God, I'm so comfortable because you actually care if I mind. I'm like genuinely very comfortable with whatever you're going to do. And to me, you also going through like the discomfort of tying up your thumbs and you're like, ah, okay. You know, like all of that.
Yeah.
That's also an invasion of personal space. And now we feel like we're on the same level as you. And you've also, do you always go like the guy that you pick to hold the pole?
Uh-huh.
What type of volunteer do you always pick for that? Do you normally go for the same type of person? Do you just grab whomever?
Whoever I can put my arms around.
Got it.
And one time, tight fit. Oh, why did I choose this guy?
that makes a lot of sense. Yep. Yep. Yeah. That's awesome. Do you always go for, do you try to grab somebody that's tall?
Not necessarily. Whoever is the best possible volunteer.
Mm.
I want them to have the best reaction.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be a dud, you know?
For sure.
No fun.
For sure.
But reactive and fun and being present, not minding all the attention.
Yeah,
those are the ones I want.
Ah, oh, cool.
Yeah. We're just going to have fun.
Yep.
That's all it is.
Yep. I love that. I feel like you make the volunteers feel very comfortable.
Oh, that's good.
And like you're a comfortable person that if you were to invade my personal space, I know it would not be weird.
Oh, good.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that like you went for Jonathan Ross and Fool Us, is it made complete sense to go around him because he's this much taller person. Like, and you're this, you know, what are you going to do?
Right.
That's creepy. Nothing.
Yeah, right.
And so I just think that's a really interesting, like, I didn't know if you had gone through thinking about how does that go or, cause you've accidentally done it really well. if you've never actually thought about it, you have done it very well.
I think through the years, it's just kind of worked itself out.
Mm.
And I don't know how long it took for my script to fall into place.
Yeah.
It's a slow progress. But no, thank you for dissecting it. I've never, ever done that.
Yeah. I think it's just every time I've seen you do it, I've never seen somebody react negatively to that moment. Have you ever had someone feel uncomfortable?
So I should tell you.
Yeah.
My worst time ever on stage.
Oh, no.
Yes. I was performing at Genting in Malaysia. It's a casino that... Poster in the door.
Yeah.
That's from Genting.
Ah, okay. We are currently sitting in your basement.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now I was a complete stupid American because the theater seated like 1,000 or 1,200 people. And I thought no one in the audience would come up on stage and make a fool of themselves, right? Of course not. So... I asked, I needed a volunteer up on stage. Nobody was volunteering. And then I saw this one guy. I said, okay, you, and then you grab them up on stage. And they were both Muslim men. I didn't think I didn't think. Nobody told me. I was stupid. So it started bad because
the shorter guy, unfortunately, was bigger. So I knew I couldn't put my arms around him. Mm-hmm. The taller guy was thinner and I could put my arms around him. So what are my choices? This guy, tall guy with the pole, fatter guy with the scissors. Mm-hmm. And when the tall guy got on stage, he was starting to horse around already. And that was already a bad sign because the pole is made of PVC piping wrapped. So I can travel with it. It's plastic, right? He started to make it look like it's a telescope into the audience. And I said, no, let's calm down. And I'm still trying to play my part and contain everybody. And then while I'm talking to the guy on the left, the guy on the right has gone backstage where the stagehands have disappeared because they know this is the bit where they don't need, I don't need them. They've gone to the green room.
What?
And my thumbs are tied. My thumbs are tied. He's gone off stage. And I have to go back there and get him because so I leave the stage. Nobody's back there to pull him back out.
Oh, no.
Pull him back out. And now I like finish tying. Okay. So I go through the pole, go through everything. And then I go through his body. No Muslim men can allow another woman to touch him. A strange woman. That was me.
Oh, no.
I wrapped my arms around him, and he freaked out.
But you're, in theory, attached to him.
Yeah.
Like, you could boop, but you're attached.
I know. I could just escape, but then that would ruin my trick. And so I decided to not ruin my trick, and I stayed tied to him. And he freaked out. He dug his elbows into where my arms were and he pushed out.
Yeah.
And that hurt a lot. It hurt a lot. He was a big guy. He was like 6'2".
Whoa.
But I wouldn't escape. So I stayed and the audience went quiet. You can hear a pin drop. Seconds pass, and then in the front row, a Muslim man stands up and he says, "Hey, why can't you just be a gentleman? Just be a gentleman." He froze in his position. Wow. Because he froze, I pushed him towards the guy with the scissors and I said, "Cut me free." He cuts me free. And then I had to think, do I do the one last trick to finish my show or do I just cry off stage now? I thought, I'm not ending it here. I'm going to do my closing.
Great.
So
which was?
It's a cut and restored ribbon trick where I do a dance and, okay. And then, after the ribbon blackout, I exit. I start bawling. My lashes come off. My makeup smeared. I don't care. I'm so alone. Like, where were the stagehands? Why didn't the light guy tell the green room people, get your butt up on stage, help her, somebody? Nobody came. And that was my worst experience. However, I decided I was not going to leave the country thinking all Muslim men are bad. So I decided I was going to have another Muslim man up on stage before I left Malaysia to calm my fears and irrational fears to say this is every Muslim man. But this time I was smart. I was told, make sure the women that they're with are not in burqas.
Ah, okay. Is that, that's a good.
Yeah. Yeah. All you saw was this. So that means they're very traditional because they have very westernized Muslim men as well. So I found a man that was with a westernly dress, western clothing, both of them and the guest they were with. So I had him come up on stage. And to me, I sensed he was either a doctor or something. And when he was tying me up, he actually was
tying me up so loose. I said, no, you got to do tighter, tighter. A complete opposite of the bad experience. And at the very end, you know, I left the country knowing you cannot do a stereotype on race.
Yeah.
Because people are people. Mm-hmm. They're all different types, no matter what race you're in.
Sure.
And so I was thankful for that last gentleman.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's what, you know, just pointing out the things that are really awesome about that story is that it was absolute crap what happened, and realizing that, like, oh no, this is a thing and now I have to identify how to fix it. And then being like, I'm going to fix it because if I leave here thinking something about a group of people, this is bad. And that's so awesome. That's an awesome, awesome story. Thank you for sharing. You are my hero. So we were going to make this transition, and then I derailed the transition. Your idea of doing a quick change to change character.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Walk
us through how this happened. One, why did you need to do it? And how did you realize that this was a thing that you could do?
Okay. So all I've ever done before I did my quick change was the Chinese Act. Mm-hmm. And then I was called and asked. It was a Canadian tour, basically. Okay. And they said, you have 20 minutes, right? My Chinese act's 8 minutes. I said, yeah, I have 20 minutes.
That is such a Jade answer. I love it. Because at this point, you've only been doing the cabaret circuit in Europe.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah. That and the castle.
Right.
What? So I didn't have to talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. And then they said they want 20 minutes. And I thought, I've got it. I thought, well, heck, if I have to put another silent act together, you know how many tricks I have to do? I got to get out of this outfit, man. I got to get out of this thing and start talking. If I talk, I only need to do 2 tricks instead of 8.
Yes.
So that's why I did the quick change. And I thought, well, I got to figure out how to make this thing work. So my mom's a seamstress. She was a professional seamstress. She's retired. She's 88. So I said, Mom, I found a pattern, Vogue pattern or something. Mom, we need to make this dress. So she sewed it to me. And that dress I still wear.
Is that that's the pink one?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
That's the same dress?
Same one. Carissa says, those outfits only last like 3 years or 4. And I'm like, no, this has been, I take really good care of it. And also, it means a lot to me that my mother made that
for
one.
Sure.
It may not be perfect. It's imperfect. I don't care.
I love it. That's awesome.
So we put that together, and then I had to figure out, how does the costume break apart to reveal my thing? And I talked to Kevin James, and I said, this is when Wizards was still around at Universal Studios.
Got you.
And I said, Kevin, I need to change my clothes. I need an idea. He says, you want to use my method? So the bag is his idea.
Ah, amazing. That's his. Also, was it yours or his idea that you step on it and it just shoots into your hand?
That was his idea.
Because that's genuinely one of my favorite moments in all of magic.
Oh,
it's
really?
Just being like, boom, it's in your hands. It's so cool.
Isn't it great?
Cool. It's so cool. It's not even magic and I don't care. It's just like, that's
looks
brilliant.
So great.
It looks so good.
It's all Kevin James, baby.
Brilliant.
I know. He's brilliant.
He was
very nice to say, hey, you have my permission. Do this. This is how
great.
It's made. And I still use it. So you have to know that everything that I do, I have the mentality that if I do it, it has to be right the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That table for my Chinese act, Brian Lee made it for me from the Magic Castle.
Yep.
He made it for me. And I've never had to replace it. I don't want to replace it.
That's amazing.
And so I have the mentality that if I'm going to do something, do it right the first time. So you don't have to keep going back. And then I see Carissa, and then she says, this is my 25th version. I'm like, wow. Okay. That's a different way of being.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to think I'm in the middle of the two of you. Maybe I would prefer just like, let's just make this one thing and then never have to change it. Like, I'm not moving that. I'm over it. I get you. I don't under, like, she's got millions of versions of just one thing.
I know.
Yeah, that's amazing. So same table, same dress. Yeah,
same.
Quick change bag.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Maybe I've adorned it a little bit more. Sure. But nothing really changed. So that's how.
Yeah. Anyway. I think so. One of my biggest pet peeves for magicians are magicians that come out, do a silent act, and then suddenly start talking. Right?
I know.
I think you understand this because it feels like a jarring change of character. And there's no catalyst to that change of character. Uh-huh. And you've solved that by adding in, like, I'm going to take down my hair and I'm going to quick change into this super awesome dress. And now I can speak. It finally gives an actual answer to how do I go from a silent act to a talking act.
And wait, did you know that when I start talking, I speak Mandarin?
Yes.
So that's a slow transition. Yes,
which is great.
So there's a moment of laughter to say, oh, well, for you, I'll speak English.
Yes.
And because they're all thankful.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I know.
It's so smart.
I don't know. I was very lucky. Mm. I don't know how it all came. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a slow progress. You know how you make little baby steps?
For sure.
And it's like, oh, that works. I think I'm going to keep that in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I've been lucky.
That's great. I love it. I think overall you have these really cool moments of, in a sense, reinventing either yourself or your show, or even yourself in the show, is going from, I'm going to work at a museum, to I'm going to work at a magic shop, to I'm going to do kids parties, to corporate, to touring Europe, to touring Canada with 8 minutes and 20 minutes. And then now, how often do you get to perform the silent act, the Chinese act?
Not that often.
Because the industry is very different now.
It's different.
And you're saying it's a pain.
It's a pain. And it's a real pain. And unless they want to pay me real money, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Jack Goldfinger, love the man, keeps saying, when are you coming back to the palace with your Chinese act? And I thought, that would be like slave wages. I would see nobody.
Yep.
I come in, I set up, clean, set up, clean. And then by 1 o'clock, I'm dead tired. I just want to go home.
Yeah.
So that's why I can't afford to do it.
For sure.
I know.
Yeah. But you get to do the Peller.
I could do the Peller, which means I actually have a life and I talk to people.
Yes. Yep.
What?
Yeah.
Really? There is such a thing.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. And then you've done the Magic Castle Cabaret.
Yes. That was recently. And I absolutely adore the experience. Mm. People are enthused. They want to be there.
Yep.
And the room is so intimate.
Yeah.
And you know what I love especially is that this is like the beginning of the Magic Castle.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I get to see the birth of the cabaret.
Yes. That's so cool.
I know.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And then you did the main stage at the Chicago Magic Lounge.
Yes, I did. And yes.
Did you do that? You didn't do the silent act
there. I did.
You did.
I did.
Cool. But that's worth it.
That's worth it.
Yeah, totally.
And then to do the transition and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun.
So you're doing more and more parlor style magic.
That, yes. You know, and Big Illusions, honestly, as a pain in the butt. Because there was a time when after I did the 20 minutes and I thought, I think I want to work cruise ships. How much time do I need?
Illusions? 7 hours.
I got it. I can do this. I did.
Yeah.
I was working all the way up until I was 3 months pregnant.
Wow.
The last ship I was on, I was 3 months pregnant. And then I got off and that was the last time because I have two kids.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was all a wonderful experience. And I know I have lots of friends that do the cruises. I think I'm done with that.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't find joy in that anymore. I find joy in performing the cabaret. I find joy in connecting with my audience.
More intimate settings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. You've done significant transitions throughout your whole career. I think that's really awesome. Do you feel like there's, because the thing that I think you keep saying and things that I keep reading in your interviews is, this happened, so I did it. Do you know what I mean? It's like somebody said, you want to do this school show? So I did it. I just made a thing. Oh, you need 20 minutes. Great. I just made a thing. Like, you just go with it. I mean, obviously that is attributed to success, but how do you feel? Like, what are the things you're getting calls for now where you're like, yeah, no, I'll do it?
I think now it's more corporate work, which the parlor / stage is perfect for that.
Great.
You know, because at the end, maybe you'll put one illusion in.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they have the money.
Yeah.
If not, then it's just
stand
up.
Yeah.
Which I'm happy about. And if they have the money, then I'll do my Chinese act.
Great.
So I'm all okay with all of it. And I have to say that there was a time, maybe, was it 2 years ago, I wanted to work on some new routines that I don't have enough time to perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So I rented a theater.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Once a month I performed.
Nice.
And I realized I don't want to produce shows because it's a real pain in the butt. And to get people in the seats is a pain in the butt.
Yes.
And I realized that nobody wants to commit to buying your ticket until the day of the show.
That's so true.
What?
Yep.
You don't know what you're doing on Friday by Thursday?
Right.
Please?
I'll be honest, I'm one of those people.
Oh! Why? Because
I don't know.
Because you might be busy?
No, I'm a massive procrastinator. I think it's, you know, the like millennial.
Yes.
Right.
Is that I blame like, that.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I do know what I'm doing in a couple of hours, but I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow.
Really?
But I'm a very go with the flow type of person. And I, unfortunately, like, my actions definitely do not do well in the theater world, because it's just like, I will buy, like, oh my God, what do you want to do tonight?
Oh, we should go to Jade's show.
Let's buy a ticket.
Oh,
I know. I'm so sorry. Oh, I apologize on behalf of me and all of my people.
I don't know. Yes, I would have a heart attack. It's like, oh my God, I only have 20 people in here. What? Yeah. I can't fit anymore in here.
Yes.
Come next week.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's frightening.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mentality I can't get through.
But it's cool that you did it to work out new material.
Yes, I did it for 4 months, which is only once a month.
That's awesome, though.
And half the time, you know, I would invite my friends and they'd like, they still wouldn't commit. It's a freaking free show. You can't commit to coming to a free show. You are so disgustingly awful. You cannot be my friend.
I didn't realize it was free either. That's an easy, like, reserve.
Well, so the thing is, if I knew that, I really need to fill these seats. But, you know, if tickets were bought, I'd be like, sorry, Connie, you can't come. Because I sold your tickets. So, because they're my friends. Yes. They weren't committing anyway.
Got it. Yeah.
So I didn't even know if they were coming.
Sure.
So how can I, somebody else wants to come?
Great. And give you money.
Yeah. They got money. And I had to rent the theater.
Right.
It's not free.
That's amazing.
So all I figured out was everything costs money. And that was my class.
Mm-hmm.
My shows were my class.
Mm.
And okay, maybe some of the things at the end of my 4 months was much better by the fourth month than the first.
Sure.
They still were entertained, just not as entertained as the fourth month.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah. But that's working on new material.
I know.
It's great.
But I couldn't have somebody pay me and then not have it finished.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather that I pay for a theater and get some people in there, mm-hmm, if I have to fill it up for free, half the seats are free.
Great.
I don't care. Just show up.
Sure.
I need an audience.
Yes.
For me to perform in front of the mirror is not a show.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. That's great. That's a good idea.
So I have to say, some of the routines that I did at the cabaret,
mm-hmm,
were a result of those 4 months, and that I've kept working on it because now I got better, and now I'm really good at it.
Nice.
So it's finished.
Great.
Now I'm on to what? Oh, yes. I have a new thing that I want to work on.
Ooh.
It's not even magic. It's not magic.
Great.
But I have a dance teacher that I really admire. And when I was doing my Chinese linking rings, people, even agents would say, please don't do the rings.
Yeah, because everyone does them.
I know.
Regardless of how good they are.
I know. And then I remember one agent particularly says, oh, no, you didn't bring your rings. I said, I did, but I don't do it like the rest of them. He says, oh, all right, fine. So at the end of the show, he came up and he says, you're right. You don't do it like the rest of them. So with that, I thought, okay, maybe I don't know what it is, but I think it's the movements and the feeling. And so with that, the tamasuda ray is a, do you know what that is?
No.
They're like, it's a bamboo mat looking thing, but you can make it into shapes.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Martin Lewis.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So I bought one for Martin Lewis.
Ah, great.
Because Peter Pitt, 30 years ago, gave me his set and said,
cool.
You should do this.
Ah, cool.
And then I thought, it's not a trick. I am not doing it.
Right.
What is it going to do? It's not a trick.
Yes.
But that's because it wasn't time. I wasn't ready for it.
Mm.
But now I have a dance teacher that it's funny. I've known her for a long time and I never once thought of her to teach me anything other than her moves.
Mm.
And when I go to her class, she actually doesn't teach dance moves. I know if Jamie Ian Swiss is listening to me, he will be belting me, but she teaches me qigong. Yeah, I know Jamie doesn't believe in qigong.
What is that?
Like Tai Chi.
Ah, okay, okay, okay. Got but it.
It's the, you know, it, this is the Chinese culture. I believe in qigong, the power of the qi, that it has something that it's immeasurable that you cannot see.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Mm.
Because I can see it when there's a martial artist, and you must have seen.
Yeah, my mother does a lot of Tai Chi now. Yeah, as like a 75-year-old woman. That's half her life.
Right?
Yeah.
But I can tell when somebody has the Chi and they do the moves, they can either dance through it or they are doing it with the Chi.
I see. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What moves them is the qi and how they're grounded. How does Bruce Lee do a one-inch punch? Do you know he does? He used to.
Yeah.
He was known for that.
They did that on Mythbusters. They were like analyzing the one-inch and three-inch punch and if it was even possible. And I don't remember the results, but it was pretty awesome to watch just a one-inch punch and the reaction, the like.
Right.
In slow-mo.
Really?
The vibrations from it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
From Bruce?
No.
Oh, from another
like somebody
master.
Who, yes, correct.
Wow. I have to see that.
Yeah.
Okay. So whatever it is.
Yes.
I know that there is power.
Yeah.
And I know that when martial artists do their thing, I can tell when they do have it or if they don't, if they're just dancing through it.
Mm.
Because I've seen red belt martial artists and then I was like, how did they get the red belt? They're dancing. They're not really. They don't have it.
Yeah.
I can't explain.
Sure. I understand. It's kind of in a way, tell me if I'm wrong. It's in a way where you watch a magician do an ambitious card routine. Either they're just going through the moves because that's what they're supposed to do, or they actually understand that the audience understands this is impossible. Is it sort of the same idea? Like, I attribute this to like a bad close-up magician just walking around going like, hi, everybody, pick a card. Oh my God. As opposed to, I actually want to have an interaction with you. Would you mind choosing,
and,
you know, like.
And being fully present.
Correct.
And
the present of it. Yeah.
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 The thing about
similar?
The chi is more.
More.
It's actually a power.
Cool.
There's a power.
Yeah.
I'll show you a video
yes,
later
please.
On.
Yeah.
And you'll see.
Yeah.
She has the power. Anyway.
Wow, cool. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
So anyway,
yes.
What I want to do is with the tamasuda ray,
yes.
I will try to have my teacher teach me the moves with the tamasuda ray. She doesn't teach me the moves. She wants me to create the moves.
Awesome.
She said, find the music. I did.
Great.
And then she says, and then I want you to listen to the music and you move.
Cool.
I will videotape you.
And then I will edit. All the moves are from you. I don't teach you. Then you own it.
Mm.
So it's my.
Yes.
Yeah. Nobody taught it to me.
Right.
And I said, Lily, that is the only way I can learn. I'm not willing to copy somebody else.
Yeah.
Because then that's not me. Better to just focus on me and make it happen. So yes. Anyway, I'm very excited about my next thing to try and master.
Mm.
Because,
awesome.
You know, because when I have nothing to work on, I feel kind of lost.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
Yeah.
I understand. Mm. Yeah. I feel that way not having a show. So like I'm not on tour right now and I just worked on a massive project every moment of every day for all last week. And I'm very thankful to have flown up here and like done press and then I get to hang out with you and do this. But days that I'm home, I'm like, oh. What do I do?
What do you do?
24 hours of just what am I doing?
What do you have prep to do?
Like, yeah, but at the same time, you're like, what? That's, I'm lost in the world. Do I have a show tonight? No? What do I do? Do I put makeup on just for fun? How do I function today? Someone hand me a microphone and give me a standing ovation. Funny. Gosh darn it. Can I walk in the kitchen and somebody clap for me? Need that. Oh,
that is so funny.
Yeah, I get you. I get it.
Oh, God.
I get it.
Makes you feel alive, right?
Totally.
If you're creating or you have to work on something.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when I don't particularly care for, I hate the creative process because I don't like the failure. It bothers me to not do something, like you said, 100% the first time. I hate it. But when that happens, when you've got it and it works, you're like, oh, yeah, yes, finally.
Yes.
And it feels so good. And then you're like, let's keep going.
I know. Yeah. Now what?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Right. And then you get it to a point where you're like, okay, this will keep going, growing. What do I do now?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, that's the scary part.
I know. I get you.
I know.
So something I'm really excited to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Is the issue you had with the sexual assault at a magic convention.
Yeah.
Because that's actually the first time. It was the proper first time you and I ever spoke, but it was actually the first time we spoke. Like, presently, not just a, oh, hello,
oh, yeah,
Matricia, right. Nice to meet you, right? It was like we actually had a conversation. And I think I would love, because this hasn't really been covered necessarily at all.
No.
Let's talk about it.
Let's do.
Where you start. It's your story. Start where you want.
I think the disappointment.
Mm.
Why I didn't report it when it first happened was because I was told by multiple people, mostly men and a woman, that nothing would be done.
Oh my God, I'm so mad. I threw my laptop. Keep going. Yes.
The woman didn't say nothing will be done. It was just more like, oh, I'm so sorry.
And that was it? So mad. So you're told by multiple men and a woman, or you're made to feel that basically this wouldn't matter. So you didn't report it.
Yeah, nothing changes. Mm-hmm. They said, just suck it up, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to bury it, and I thought I managed to bury it until 2 years after. Or is it two or three? I cannot remember. When Oscar Munoz was the president of IBM.
Right.
I was working at the TAOM.
Mm.
And I ran into Oscar. And this situation came up and was talking about the particular gentleman. And I said, oh, let me tell you my story. Oscar was taken aback and said, I'm shocked that nobody did anything. I said, nobody did anything. He says, well, that's going to change. He was the incoming president.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we went back and forth and he told me, I think as the next IBM thing was happening, he said, I'm sorry to tell you that the gentleman has been hired again to work the light and sound for the upcoming joint IBM-SAM convention. And it infuriated me.
Mm.
And because when Oscar and I talked about it, I started crying and realized me not talking about it didn't mean that I was over it.
Mm-hmm.
I just buried it deep and thought, well, what's the point? Nobody's going to do anything anyway. And what am I going to do? But when I found out that he was going to do the light and sound, I thought, well, I'm going to write to the IBM and the SAM and tell them that if you decide to do that, I will post it on social media, what happened years ago.
And at this point, people in both those organizations knew?
Sure.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So this wasn't coming out of left field.
No.
People knew.
No, they knew. I've given them my written reports.
Mm-hmm.
And it was discussed, but nobody did anything. Good old boys.
Yeah.
And so because they continued and went ahead and gave a deposit for the service that was to be delivered for the joint convention, that really pushed me over the edge. And I thought, I count. I matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that something should be done. So I got a lawyer so that I was covered. And then I went on social media and posted it.
Mm-hmm.
And within 35 hours, he was fired and his website disappeared. So that's what happened.
It's amazing that it took a public post to make something, to have action taken.
I think that's the way the world works now.
Mm-hmm.
Social media is super powerful.
Very. Yeah. You have a backing. You have like a people that will stick up for you, even though you've never met them.
But the thing, though, is social media could be finicky.
Yeah.
And that's why I had a lawyer.
Smart.
In case mm-hmm. it went the other way.
Did you receive backlash? Were people being negative? Because obviously positive action was taken. There, you know,
mm-hmm.
people were. And I remember reading the comments because you and I had spoken about what you were going to say before posting it. Mm-hmm. So I remember being there being like, I'm going to keep track of this whole situation. Mm-hmm. So people were rather supportive from at least my outside experience looking in that obviously then 35 hours later, that person was no longer in the picture. Did you receive negative comments, backlash emails?
Not really. I think the harshest comment was, well, it's been 3 years. Why didn't you bring it up 3 years ago mm-hmm. when it happened?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? That's a common question. That every white men question all the victims.
Yes. Yeah. What were you wearing? Had you been drinking? Why didn't you bring it up right away? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no sympathy for the fact that what if it was your wife or your daughter?
Mm-hmm.
Would you be saying the same things?
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't keep track of it anymore.
Mm.
It's over. It came to light and it did what it needed to do. And I've moved on.
Mm, that's great. So this process definitely helped you.
Yes.
Great.
Yes. I don't cry about it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have moments of, we have an episode where we cover sexual assault within magic and Carissa and I share, one of our multiple stories in the episode, you know, no names or anything named, but we just share our experience and then how that has affected us since. Like Carissa doesn't sit down when she's backstage. Like that is a thing that she doesn't do.
Oh.
I identify two exits in every room I walk into.
Mm.
Like there are things like that, that because of situations we've identified and that's how we feel safer and more protected in a situation. Do you feel like there is there anything, because this happened backstage, is that accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like there are, do you think differently now when you're performing, when you're backstage? Is there any sort of thing that you're like, oh, this is now something that I'm doing to make sure I feel safe and protected? Or are you, you know, you've identified like, okay, I went through a healing process and everything's cool now? Or do you feel like there are things that you do to make yourself feel safer? We like to identify how it still affects you mm-hmm. so that people can hear.
Yeah.
I think I've always trusted my gut. Mm. That one came from the left field.
Yeah.
What was he thinking?
Yeah.
I'm not 25. I've been around the world and it's never happened to me anywhere else.
Yeah.
It's just so surprising.
Mm.
But live and learn, like the Muslim man.
Yeah.
Something will come from the left field and surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that I'm more alert than usual. Yeah, maybe I keep my distance, right? Mm. Arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
People I don't know or have questions about. I don't need to be cozy.
Yeah, right.
I don't have a reason to.
Mm-hmm.
I think from now on, though, if something should happen, I will now loudly proclaim that shit is not happening.
Yes.
And what did you just do? You know, when it happened to me, I shut down.
Yes.
I didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have the exact same story. Just it happened. You just shut and then you're out. Cause it does feel like your fault, right? It feels like maybe if I had just not done this one thing. Did you feel that way?
Nope.
Oh, good. That's awesome. Cause that's usually a thing. That's good that you didn't feel like it was your fault. No, I just still shut down.
I was scared. Actually, yeah. I was scared because what happened was then after the show, I was hanging out with Lance Burton.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw the gentleman come into the hotel getting food or whatever. And I was frightened.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel fearful.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Lance, can you walk me to the elevator?
Mm.
I need to go to my room.
Yeah. If you need to trust anybody to walk you anywhere, it's Lance Burton.
It's Lance.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I get that.
So he took the elevator up to the floor and then he made sure I was okay. And then he went back downstairs. And so that was the only time that I had to cross that person's path afterwards, but not again ever. And should it ever happen again, I will not be quiet. Because
mm-hmm.
no women are trained
right.
to speak up.
Yeah. Yep.
So done with that.
Mm-hmm.
So done with that.
Yes. That's a.
How do we train the young ladies?
That's a massive reason why I wanted to talk to you about this, because you did what I did, what Carissa did, what all of my friends who this has ever happened to have done, not just within the magic community, throughout everything. And unfortunately, I think it takes. Like, because there is no training, it either takes somebody telling you, you got to be ready, or it takes a situation to happen for then you to go, I need to be louder next time, or actually say something.
Say something.
Right. And it, unfortunately, I think, well, for me, at least, it took multiple goes for me to go, oh my God, well, I should say a thing. I should say something. I can say that this is wrong. No one told me this was wrong. Why didn't anybody tell me this was wrong?
Yeah.
Oh, it's wrong. Something's terrible. But it takes the situation, or it takes people continuously telling you. And I think now there's so many resources, but we really focus on this on multiple occasions for that exact reason, and hope that if one woman is hearing this episode and something happens to her and she decides to speak up because you told your story, then we've done what we wanted.
Could be a boy too.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely. And there have been sexual assaults committed by women on women, on men. Like, nobody is free of victim, and also everybody it's possible to be the perpetrator. So certainly statistically, and coming from my perspective, I tend to say if this helps women, but also this is for anybody.
Anybody.
But also I feel like statistically women are more likely to be sexually assaulted by a man than any other situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. I mean, sexual assault is sexual assault.
That's right.
No matter who's doing it and to whom.
Yeah.
And I know within magic, it's certainly been multiple cases of all of the above.
That's right.
Yeah. But hopefully with Shazam, We've shared our story. I literally am wearing my Don't Touch Me sweatshirt.
Oh, right.
And then you shared, you know, talking to you about it and like your experience and that no one was willing to help until you went boom public.
Yeah.
And then shortly after.
Yeah.
Situation handled. I think it's awesome that you did that. I don't care how long it took. That doesn't matter. And it should never matter.
Yeah.
And I think it's really awesome that you went, no, I'm not. This is what you're doing is not okay.
Yeah.
And we're making a change. It's really
it's
powerful.
Time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just like no more Chungling Sue's.
Right. I hear you. That's
it's
right.
Time.
Yeah. No, that's not okay anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to add about that experience?
No, I think we've covered it. Speak up.
Mm-hmm.
Be proactive. Don't just stay silent. Like, oh, it doesn't matter. No, it mattered. I thought it didn't matter, but it mattered a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that until you've been in that position, can you imagine how much it affects you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yay. All right. So we're going to end on a happy note.
Yes.
So we always end our episodes with a lightning round. So I'm just going to ask you a question and you can answer it super fast. So I'm just going to go boom. And then you answer it boom. Or you could also Max Maven it and answer each question for 2 hours. Whatever you feel is your favorite thing. Ready?
Ready.
Okay. What's your go-to magic resource?
My magic resource, my books.
You have a lot of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just at pick them one.
Great. All of them.
And they're all, there's a gem in each one.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find them.
Sure.
You got to work them out. Yeah.
Yep.
Always books.
I love it.
Yeah.
Great. Big dogs or little dogs?
Little dogs.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite client market? Like corporate, kids? Magic Castle, what's your favorite client?
Small theaters.
Small theaters. Like what size?
300.
Mm. Lovely.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah.
Favorite dessert?
Tiramisu.
Ooh. Okay. Tiramisu. I like it. What is something within magic you would want to try that you have not yet? I know that that list is tiny, but is there something in magic that you're like, you know what? I haven't done that thing. Either it be a market you haven't tapped or a trick you haven't tried or type of magic.
Type of magic. Can't think of any. I think I'm doing the things that are intriguing me now.
Mm.
I'm dabbling into everything. A little mentalism, a little bit of theatrical presentations of a simple, you know, it's all presentation.
Yeah.
Really, that's what it is. I used to think mentalism was the most difficult thing to perform. You have to be convincing. You have to be a really good actor.
Yes.
And I didn't think I was able to. So little by little, I'm getting it.
Great.
I love it.
That's awesome.
It's so fun.
Mm.
Yeah. So it makes me feel alive to try something new and different.
Great. Great. I like it. Can you shout out just a woman that you think is doing great things, whether in magic or out of magic, just a woman that you're like, people should check her out because she's great. You cannot say me or Carissa.
Okay, I will say my dance teacher, Lily, because she's teaching something that is not ever taught.
Mm.
And she has a point of view that I've never heard of. And the creations of performances, the creations are unique and very eye-catching and emotional. And it's just a dance. That's why I've chosen her to be my teacher for the Tamasutra Ray. If she can evoke emotion out of just movement, then I have something else. I'm just so excited. Yeah, I can't wait.
That's
yes.
Great.
Anyway, yeah.
Lovely. Good. All right, last one. You have 5 words to say.
Okay.
If that man that you were helping with the Asian act, with the Chinese act, was in standing in front of you right now, uh-huh. five words or less, what uh-huh. would you say to him?
Practice. Be authentic. Enjoy the moment.
That was six words, but
really?
I think it's lovely. That was way nicer than I thought you were going to go. I thought you were going to be like, fuck you, you Caucasian man. That's what I say, but you're too nice.
Well, he came from a different era. So I cannot blame him, can I?
I know. I'll still be mean. But I like it. That's great. Cool. That's it. We did it. Yay. Oh my God, we did it. Thank you, Jade.
Oh, thank you. Oh my God.
No one can that see us fun. Hug, but I loved it.
That was fun.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Shazam is sponsored in part by the Society of American Magicians. Thank you, SAM. Go join a club.